Welcome to the Esports Wars podcast. Now, allow me to introduce our guest, Barney Banks, who I could only really describe as a human Swiss Army knife. You know, started out as a professional dancer, model, before moving into the world of esports. Having hosted a ton of various events, to top it off, whilst doing this, he's also become a little bit of a TikTok star with family-focused content. But without further ado, run the tapes.
Ladies and gentlemen, 200 players, 50 teams, $3 million and one trophy. Welcome to Championship Sunday, Merhaba Istanbul!
Hello and welcome to Gamers 8, live from Jakarta!
$2.5 million worth of charitable donations up for grabs, and of course, a qualifying spot for Gamers 8 later this summer. It's time to kick off Counter-Strike. We are joined by Ferrer, the coach from our EU Champions Vitality. Did they feel comfortable? Because you hadn't really been tested up to that point.
To the 2022 Clash of Clans World Finals.
Green Box, the heart of virtual reality.
Tomorrow will be day two where things are really going to start to heat up. It's all on the line in this match. Are you ready? Clash on!
Mobile World Invitational. My name is Banks and I am your host, and I'm coming to you live from the Gamers 8 Arena.
Welcome to Gaming Night. So why not start with the big guns? Ronaldinho, welcome to Gaming Night.
The audience are raring to go. Woody, say something epic.
Thank you all for joining us on this amazing ride.
See you tomorrow.
Barney, thank you for joining us. How are you? How do you even find the time for this?
Thanks for having me, mate. You know what? Yeah, I think just I enjoy, it's that really weird cliche thing, isn't it? Of like, I enjoy what I do. Like, so work isn't necessarily work all the time. It's fun. Like, I love it.
As simple as that. After seeing that showreel, honestly, like, that is a way to make an entrance. You've got Imagine Dragons blasting about a million events on there, as well as the fact, obviously, the TikTok star. I don't know how you find the time. How do you manage that time?
I guess it's evolved into a system whereby, like, the first half of the year, typically I'm a stage host, right? Not as much of a desk host now. I do a lot more stage stuff, and typically stage events don't happen till later in the year. So the first kind of 3 or 4 months of the year, I actually try to focus mainly on things like content, YouTube, TikTok, all that kind of stuff. And then as we progress throughout the year, it kind of bleeds more into stage hosting and esports events, and the TikTok stuff starts to slow down. But, you know, we're constantly trying to find a good balance, you know, between family life and making content and also working in like the esports side of things. So it's always kind of a balancing act, right? But the esports stuff is still something that's really close to my heart, and I want to continue doing it. I guess it's just worked out that way, that I can focus on the content at the beginning of the year and focus on the esports towards the end of the year. And then hopefully in the middle, it doesn't get too hectic.
In the middle, where it all blends together. But it was my first time meeting you last year, because you obviously came out to LA, hosted the esports wars and the movies. And a lot of people that you expected to be like, you know, they have to turn it on for the camera. But no, you kind of are just like 100% all the time today. Like, always energy. All right. I feel like that probably helps you a lot.
Yeah, I just feel like from the work that I've done previously leading into before I was a presenter, a lot of people would say to me, you know, you talk for England, or, you know, you chat a lot of SHIT, but also just the ability to hold a half decent conversation for a long period of time. People were like, oh, I could see why you'd want to be a presenter, because it was something I would always talk about. Like, I'd love to do that in the future, you know, after my career, you know, in the dancing world and stuff like that. That was something I'd always want to do. And I guess it kind of worked out that way. But it wasn't always smooth sailing, as I'm sure we'll talk about. You know, it was a bumpy road to get to where I am now. But I think that, yeah, it does kind of come naturally to me to an extent. And then there's obviously a lot of hard work that goes on behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, of course. And was it always esports you wanted to get into hosting? Just because your style's very, I would say, natural broadcast style, whereas a lot of esports is very different. It's very gamified, whereas you come across on very TV.
Yeah, I guess that makes a bit of sense. I think that when I first decided to go into the world of I always wanted to be a presenter. And the idea was that when a dancer's career kind of is capped at about 30 years old, when you get to 30, you start to notice that everyone that's a bit younger is getting booked for the jobs. But also you need to kind of realize that you need to make a decision. Do I go into creative direction? Do I go into choreography? Or do I just go into another kind of arm of the entertainment industry entirely? So I went into radio. I kind of got forced to kind of quit my job as a dancer because of an injury. And so it just pushed up the years. My plan was to stop when I was 30 and go into presenting. It was 26. I got a back injury, decided to go into the world of presenting. And I went into radio, started doing things like on Heart Radio in Kent. There was a huge culling of jobs, something that we're familiar now with in the gaming industry, which forced the Heart Radio station that I was working with in Kent to shut down. But before that happened, I actually interviewed an incredible person in the gaming industry called Julia Hardy. And when I interviewed her on the radio show, which was something completely separate from the gaming side of things, she was opening my eyes and telling me about esports and telling me about how that world was developing. And now we're in arenas and all this stuff. And I was like, wait, hold on. Tell me again, what? And I just didn't know that esports had grown to that extent. So then immediately I just started hounding ESL and like all the production companies I could, and Gfinity, and basically all the production companies that I could figure out that were doing these amazing shows. I just emailed them. I think I emailed ESL once every 2 weeks for 2 years before I got my first job.
And that's the best. People always ask, how do you make it in esports? It's always stories. It's always a story like that. And it's like, well, I annoyed someone every day of the week for a couple of years and eventually they gave in.
Yeah, relentless persistence. It does work.
It does. We worked with Julia Hardy, but that was slightly before my time. She hosted the Esports Wars back in the day. But have you always been into like gaming? Because obviously you said, yes. You'd heard esports blew up, but was it always like, you know, you'd played games, been around games and so on?
Yeah, it wasn't that the esports had blown up and then I was like, oh, I want to get into esports. It's that I'd been a gamer my whole life, but I just hadn't really heard about esports and I hadn't really kept my ear to the ground about competitive gaming. It was always casual, but it was all the time. It was from Nintendo 64 days right the way through to PlayStation 4 was then the year that I was like, oh, I think I'd like to get into this, or maybe Xbox 360, but I'd played all the CODs. You know, Nintendo 64 days was GoldenEye and Mario and all that stuff. And then it bled into PlayStation and Xbox, which then, yeah, ultimately I was playing a lot of Call of Duty, Grand Theft Auto. And again, it was still in a casual way. I'd started to play multiplayer games a lot more when I was at uni, of course. All my spare time being spent on PlayStation. After that, it was then, oh, there's actually a legitimate career path in this. And also in what I love to do, which is talking or being a presenter. So the fact that I could marry, you know, my biggest passion off screen to something that I could do on screen was just the perfect blend for me. And so I then thought, this is something I have to get involved in one way or another. And, you know, ultimately, did it the way of fake it till you make it. I'd go to Call of Duty events. I'd buy a ticket. I'd wait outside the front. I'd bring my mate along and I'd have a microphone in hand and a camera. And one of two things, I'd either grab pro players as they were entering the arena for a quick interview and I would pretend that I was from some magazine, or that same thing, I would pretend I was from some sort of magazine and get a press pass to the event so that I could go into the press area and interview players. And I was just faking it. I wasn't actually there with the magazine, but I was like, I'm from, you know, Gamers That Game magazine, and I need to interview this team and, you know, whatever it was. And sometimes you got to do that. You got to just like grab a camera and go and do it yourself until someone realizes that you actually have the capability to do it on an official broadcast.
I love that game is that game. I feel like every pro would be like, who's this boomer outside trying to talk to me?
Boomer is the game. That's me.
Esports is a weird one. It's like you said, dancing. Obviously, when you hit a certain age, you feel like people are younger getting booked. It's like esports is like the next breakthrough star is always some like 16, 17 year old. And it's like, I remember 10 years ago and I was like looking at people, like, oh, I'm the same age as them. You know, that's cool. And I was like, oh, I'm 10 years old. I could be their older brother now. I'm like, great. Yeah. Has been and never was.
I feel the same. I feel like one of my concerns, I guess, in the esports world is that no one wants to be like interviewed by some gray, you know, dad who's on stage, like chatting to them after they've just won an event when they're 16, 17, 18 years old. That is something that's always in the back of my mind of, you know, will I still be being booked when I turn old and gray? Like, is there something that I need to kind of lean into more? Or will it, you know, the passion for gaming, as long as it stays there, ultimately it doesn't matter who's interviewing you as long as they're asking the right questions, right?
Yeah, I mean, I hope you do get to keep doing it as you grow old, because you can't have another career that you've got. Like, right, I've got this amount of years where I need to move into something else.
Yeah, it's always the way, man. You always got to be thinking ahead. I'm not particularly good at that. My partner Jamie's amazing at that. She's like, right, what are we doing next year, the year after that? So yeah, that's definitely a plus.
I mean, I feel that one because I'm actually terrible at looking ahead. I just wing it. I've been winging it for the last 10 years. I'll wing it for the next 10. I keep going like that.
Fair play, mate.
But would you say, like, from your dancing to being a host, obviously, like you mentioned, like marrying passions together and so on. I feel like, although that you're not on stage dancing as an esports host, I feel like almost you're kind of used to the, you know, the pressure, the crowds, the audience, and also putting on a performance. Would you say that it's kind of like helped you get to where you are?
I would, yeah. I guess it's just stage presence. But also there's like a physicality element to being on stage just in general. One of the first things that I learned when I actually went to like a presenter boot camp, just to go, are there any like core things that I need to learn that will just help me in the long run, or help me just figure out some sort of foundation to build at this point in time, like when it comes to stage presence? Because as a dancer, the physicality of what you're doing is what you're doing. Whereas when you're a presenter, it's all about how you communicate. And one of the first things that I learned, which actually transpired into dancing as well, or translated into dancing, was anchoring yourself. A lot of people you'll notice physically when they're on stage, if they're hosts, maybe it's their first few times they've done it, they haven't got comfortable yet or whatever. A lot of people sway when they're talking, and basically they pat their feet, which is just like they're talking to you, but they are, and you see how distracting it is while I'm doing it right now, while I'm talking to you. But people will be on stage talking, and when they're holding the microphone up, they're like this. And that's called anchoring. You've got to anchor your body and center your like gravity and ensure that basically you're not doing that, because it's distracting for the viewer. And it also makes you look like you're nervous. So one of those things, that was the first thing I learned on day one when I went to this boot camp thing. And that's been the one thing that's actually stuck with me throughout, because ultimately you find your own feet, you find your own style, the way that you like to host on stage, because everyone has their unique thing. But also you do notice it. Like, I will watch other esports and I'll notice a host or someone or an interviewer or whatever, and they're doing this while they're talking, and I'm thinking, it sounds so basic to say to someone, but actually it affects the broadcast quite significantly from my point of view, like my perspective as well, because those are the things that I'm looking out for.
Yeah, like I said, it almost feels like you're from a TV background on a stage, like I said earlier, because a lot of esports hosts, they were like once just working in an office, then they were plucked out because they were charismatic or a talker. Like, yeah. Obviously in League of Legends, we have Dash. He's like probably one of the most famous stories of, he was just in the office and they plucked him because he's a charismatic former actor. So he's like, he can talk. So they just plucked him out. But it's interesting you mentioned, obviously you went to a boot camp, went to training, because like that's what everyone thinks esports hosting goes. It's like, oh, you're plucked out of an office, random choice, you're lucky. But it's like, it can be a lot of work, but it's not just the work of getting there. The travel's insane. Like, you're traveling the world all year round. You've got a family now. It's like, how do you balance the fact that you will just be booked for an event halfway across the world out there for weeks?
I guess I'm extremely lucky that my partner, Jamie, now my fiance, is, I guess... she's extremely understanding of how the industry works. She's actually in a similar industry. She's in the entertainment industry. She's a DJ. So she has to kind of up and leave for a week at a time or a couple of days at a time. So we both have that level of understanding. It's about basically having a really good structure at home and the capability to be adaptable at home as well. Like, neither of us have a 9-to-5. We kind of do it on a first come first serve basis of, if she's already booked on a job and then someone tries to book me for a week away to do an event, I can't really take that event unless we figure something out. So, you know, it really is true, the whole it takes a village to raise a kid, because I have family nearby and she has family nearby. So we're quite lucky that actually, if we both need to be away, there is the possibility of doing that. But yeah, it's definitely become harder, but you just roll with it. I think that as a parent, you know, your number one priority is home and making sure that everyone's happy and thriving. And then, you know, if I get to go and work and do what I love and then come back and it hasn't caused an absolute stinker at home and then everything's falling apart, then we're happy days, mate. So yeah, we just kind of roll with it. She's great at doing the same. And, you know, I guess the events that I have to go to typically are longer, where she sometimes flies to Italy, does the gig, flies back the next day. So that is a lot easier. So for me, it's like a week or two at a time. And that can be hard. And then obviously in the summer, We have the Esports World Cup, and that can be 6 to 8 weeks away, and that's when things can get a bit tougher.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to. Obviously, sometimes you're away, like your gigs are not just, you know, a weekend. It's not like Championship Sunday. It's you're here for an entire extended stay. And obviously, that's tough. But it's kind of like the unglamorous side that people think about the hosting, because it's like, oh, nice hotels, new countries, new experiences. It's like, I'm living out of a suitcase for 8 weeks straight. Yeah. Obviously, not the easiest for you.
No, it can be like, look, ultimately the job is amazing and I'd never change anything. But yeah, of course, there's a lot of traveling involved. There's a lot of prep that goes into every event. And ultimately, you're not really given a huge amount of time. You really do have to keep your ear to the ground with all the esports that you want to work in or that you already do work in, because things change. There's roster mania, there's like changes in the game, there's updates, there's patches, there's like alterations constantly happening in every esport that make dramatic impacts. And if you're not aware of them, then you can get caught slipping on live on air. I'm fortunate that as a stage host, you can get away with having a more generic overview of a specific game, but you don't want to be that guy. You want to be the person that understands what's going on, like the real nitty gritty of the game. And also within, you know, the gossip or like the roster mania elements of each game as well, because those are talking points that you have to have on stage when you're interviewing players in between games. So one of the hardest things I would say as a host is that when you get to an event, you're really only given 2 days of prep before the event starts. And if you're not, you know, glued to that esport for weeks leading up to the event, or if you don't keep your ears to the ground enough about that esport, again, you can get caught out. So one of the harder things is getting to the venue. And the way that I like to prep is I like to actually have an open line of communication with the players. So if I get the opportunity to go and chat with one of them and talk to them about how they're feeling, or talk to them about a roster change that's happened recently, or a rival that they're going up against in round one in the group stage, all those little tidbits of information really, really help bring an interview together. And I feel like that's where the difficulties can lie. And it's not necessarily the traveling or the, you know, the long hours on stage and rehearsing and preparation. It is just, you know, enabling or ensuring that I can be the best at what I do and really bring something valuable to a broadcast, rather than being the generic overview on stage of just, hey, everyone, welcome. These are the teams. This is the prize pool. Let's get into it. It's nice to have extra bits of information. And if you go that extra mile, it can really translate on broadcast. And then, you know, a lot of people say like, don't read the chat and don't read the comments and all that stuff. But ultimately, if the community likes you in a game, you're more likely to be hired again. So you listen to the community, listen to what they're crying out for, and listen to the style of questions or the style of interviews that they like to see and hear. And yeah, don't rub the players up the wrong way. So that's kind of, yeah, I think, yeah, going into like that side of things, I think the prep for each individual game as a stage host, because you bleed across games. You're one of the only talent that works within esports that really jumps from game to game. There's a few casters that do that, but it's quite few and far between. So as the host, you've got to be able to land in an esport or like land at an event and really ingrain yourself as much as you can in those few days before the event starts.
Yeah, really got to hit the ground running. It. Something you said there, obviously, imagine you're an analyst for like Counter-Strike. You cannot really be an analyst for anything but Counter-Strike now, because your whole, your whole personality is knowing, you know, the KDs, the performances, the headshot percentage ratios and everything along those lines. But obviously you've worked a variety of games, because, you know, stage host, although you have to do a prep, you like to dive in, know the players a little bit more than just, hi, how are you? But which of the games would you say is sort of the one that's like stood out for you over the years, if you had to go through them all?
So like stood out for me, obviously I've been a long time player of Call of Duty. So Call of Duty is like one that I personally love. And I've only ever got to work in the esports of Call of Duty once, which was at the Esports World Cup last year. And it was such like a big moment for me personally, because there are still players playing now that were playing when I was like really heavily obsessed in the whole like Optic phase, like community. Like I was Team Optic and I was like super into it, and you know, still am, and I still watch it. So actually being able to get involved in that esport at like a major level as well, because the Esports World Cup is the Esports World Cup, right? And the prize pool's huge and we have all the best players there, but there are players that are playing now that were playing back then. So it was actually quite a cool full circle moment that I got to interview a few of them, and that was really exciting for me. And then I guess esports for me are as good as the players kind of allow it to be. There are some esports that, you know, I'll get involved in, and the players just don't want to be interviewed and they're not made to interview, which I think is a bit of a travesty. I think that as a representative of an organization, as a player, you should want to be interviewed or want to do interviews. And I know that that sounds counterintuitive for a player because they're like, I want to focus on the game. But ultimately, you're still a representative of an organization and you want to show that organization in the best light. And ultimately, that organization wants to get the most screen time they physically can. So if you're turning down interviews, I just see that as a bit, I don't know, it's a bit of a cop out. And I think that there are players and individuals and organizations in certain esports that really relish the interview process and really get involved in the media stuff that they do prior to the tournament starting. And those are the esports that I love. So like, I've had a few really great experiences in PUBG with that. Some really great experiences with some mobile games like Brawl Stars and Clash of Clans. Some of those games that I've worked with, you know, from the beginning. And I think that those are the best ones. So, you know, there's a team that's just been signed by Falcons who were Sonics, which is, you know, Tiggleton and Shrimzy. Those guys that play, they're great at being interviewed. Obviously, FaZe at PUBG as well. Jeans, like, he's great at being interviewed and they love it. And I think that elevates the broadcast so much when they're willing to really, like, poke fun at themselves, poke fun at their rivals, have a bit of banter and just really enjoy the process rather than fighting back and fighting against it. Only makes you look awkward as a player. And also just doesn't make your organization look great. It doesn't put them in the right light, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I completely understand, because with Call of Duty, I always feel like that's like the holy grail of player personalities. There's always, on the stage itself, they're screaming across at each other, they're shouting, it's all about the fan experience. And even when it's like not a huge arena, like we saw at the Esports Stadium Arlington with the Optic boys, they're coming out with the drum doing the Green Wall chant and the whole place is going crazy. Like, that doesn't exist without the interview they did 10 years ago and getting into it fully.
Yeah, mate, it's like it's the merging of the side of like content and pro player. Like, it's like all the pro players are content creators as well. So they understand the importance of a great interview. They understand the importance of rivalries and the importance of like beef between players as well. It's what creates an amazing storyline going into an event. And it's what gets people like fired up. And people pick sides and it almost becomes like football, right? It becomes tribal. You know, anyone that kind of watches Rocket League, like Rocket League is the same. You know, Carmine Corp are just like their own.
Well, I'm talking this is team vitality and
they love it. And it's crazy. Just, like I said, it's tribal. And like, that's kind of what you want as a talent as well, because you can lean into those storylines and you can get the crowd fired up. And I think it's just you got to understand that we're bringing you entertainment. It's not only let's find the best person in the world. It's what entertainment value can we bring you as well on top of that? And I think, yeah, like you said, Call of Duty, I think Apex is close behind now. Apex is great at making the storylines and these players and characters. And yeah, Counter-Strike's been doing it for, you know, decades.
Counter-Strike's got some great personalities. Yeah. What are the games that, this is going to sound bad, but has fell off in personalities? I'd say it's League of Legends, because back in the day, you used to get a TSM chant in a league that TSM Demon playing in Europe or along those lines. And then like the biggest streamers on Twitch were League of Legends ex-pros. Whereas now of the players, I feel like you said, they're kind of shying away from interviews because they're so focused on, I want to be the best player. And sadly, the brutal truth is not everyone's going to be the best player. But the ones who amass all the, you know, the sort of media attention and so on, do the interviews, like they're now, you know, whether they're a popular analyst, whether it's like Cadrel and he's now Los Ratones and, you know, got absolutely huge. And it's kind of like, it builds you almost like a career for post-playing. You know, you're not going to be a player forever, but just like, do you want to go back to office work or school, or do you want to be a streamer, an analyst, etc.?
I agree, man. Yeah, totally. I think that you need to always be thinking ahead of like we spoke about earlier, of what are you going to do after you're a pro player? But at the same time, I do understand that there are some pros that, A, they're not like media trained, and nor do they want to be media trained. And all they want to do is focus on playing the game and winning. And I do get that. But again, you're in an industry that, you know, thrives off entertainment. If you can do both, you will be doubly as popular. And also, yeah, like you said, you'll have a potential job as talent coming off the back of being a pro player, because who better to be an analyst or to even be a caster coming off the back of being a pro? Like, being a pro, you know the ins and outs of the game better than anyone. So, you know, jobs are just waiting there for people who are ex-pros to step into. So, you know, it's basically future-proofing, like, for yourself as a career. And if it's not for you, it's not for you. Ultimately, if I'm going to interview you, there are different styles of interviewing people that you know don't want to be interviewed. So you can offer up, you know, I feel like when I interview someone that's not wanting to be interviewed, and I can feel it, and I can feel that they just don't want to be there, and they're all locking up. Every time I ask them a question, I give them options at the end of the question to answer, rather than standing there and letting them try and find the words, or letting them try and figure out what they want to say, or if they don't want to say anything. Instead, just give them options. You know, what was that last play like? I can't believe that happened. Were you thinking this, or were you thinking this? Or what was happening with your team communication going into that? You know, were they hyped, or were they, you know, so if you're giving someone options, then they can pick one and the interview can go a bit smoother and you can just kind of keep things moving, chugging along. Whereas if you say, tell me about blah, and they go, and then they start freezing up, that's when interviews can go a bit south. So I like to kind of gauge how the interview is going to go from a certain person. If they're not media trained, or if they don't seem interested, it's better to just give them options to keep the interview chugging along. But yeah, it's always great when you interview someone that wants to be interviewed. And, you know, I did the Clash of Clans World Championships in November last year, I think. And, you know, in the final, the team that won, you know, he snatched the microphone out of my hand and just started a chop. But by the way, never snatch the microphone out of the host's hand. That's when all hell breaks loose. But yeah, he started a chant with the audience and things like that. And I was like, okay, this is awesome. So, you know, there are great moments to be had with players that want to be interviewed. And ultimately, I'll pick them out. You have to try and have a conversation with a lot of players before we start the interviews. Before we start the tournament at the very beginning, they're lining up backstage before they do their Olympic walkouts. And I'll start talking to players and I'll make a mental note of, okay, they'd be good for an interview. They seem chatty. They seem engaging. They seem hyped up. And, you know, you kind of pick out players that you think, oh, they're not really fast.
Yeah, it's like you got that little bit of finesse as a host where it's like, you know, you're naturally picking people out, but also, like you said, in the interview, you're making sure if it's someone who's not super comfortable, there's an A or a B. They're rather than come up with the answer on your own and just watching them freeze on a stage. Because like you said, when you've got the microphone still at your hand, I guarantee there was someone in your ear saying, get that microphone back.
No one knows what's going on in here, but it's just chaos of like, why has he got a microphone? Get it back now. We need to close out the show. So yeah.
But it makes good moments. And like you said, the crowd was going absolutely crazy. But like we saw from your show reel, you play into the crowd sometimes and like hype them up. And, you know, you're making moments happen and a little bit of hype. But how important do you think like it is to sort of get the crowd sort of raring to go, making noise, clapping, all that sort of fan?
Hugely. I think that, you know, ultimately it's going to jeer up. There's only positives that can really come out of that, right? So if you can get the crowd pumped up for a particular moment, I'm also thinking about moments for production, because I know that at the end of the day, in the production suite, there's going to be editors who are making showreel style, you know, clips or highlight reel for the end of the day. And you know that those moments, if you like screaming into the camera and them screaming back at you, they're always going to make that highlight reel, right? So, and it's going to make the highlights a bit more palatable for people that maybe aren't huge fans of the game. I make a point of when I do each show that people who aren't really huge fans of the game, but maybe come across the highlight reel or maybe come across the stream, feel like they can engage with the video or feel like they can understand it. So in a way, I kind of try and dumb it down just a little bit to be like, oh, if even when I'm interviewing someone, I can say like, well, for people that aren't as familiar with this strategy, can you give it a go in a little bit more depth and understand or explain it to me like I'm a 10-year-old? Like those kinds of questions are actually quite valuable because you're bringing in more casual viewers into the esports that maybe don't understand the game and all of its depth. But yeah, I love the kind of call and response. I actually learned a lot of that, or, you know, learned the importance of that from other hosts that work in esports as well. You know, you watch other people to see where their strengths lie and you see like the value that it can bring to a production or a broadcast. So like Ian Chambers, for example, is one of them. Like he loves crowd work. Like he gets in the crowd and just interviews random people. He does call and response almost every time that he comes out. And yeah, it makes for great broadcast, but it also gets the crowd fired up so that when you actually have big moments happening on stage, the crowd will get involved. They'll all start screaming. They'll start chanting. So yeah, you're essentially just warming up the crowd at the opening of the show if you're doing a bit of call and response to them.
Just trying to make the atmosphere good, trying to get, and because people are paid to be there, they want to they want to get a little bit lively, and it's not the kind of crowd, you know, look at football, etc. You've got a certain stereotype, whereas an esports crowd, they're not naturally going to sit there and start chatting, cheering and going absolutely crazy. So it helps when a host is sort of, you know, helping out with that. But would you say there's any hosts that you've looked up to over your time? Obviously you mentioned Ian, but is there any others that have like stood out that you've sort of like studied to?
I think that the ultimate thing that you ultimately need to do is to find your own style, find your own skill set. But that doesn't come naturally all the time. I think that one of the things you need to do is be aware of the other hosts around you or the other people that work within your role, and kind of just take bits of inspiration from each person to go, oh, actually, yeah, I like the way they did that. That's great. So, you know, when I first stepped into esports, Frankie was always someone who did like a lot of stuff that, and a lot of games that I looked into as well, and stuff that I enjoyed. You know, she was in Brawl Stars before I started doing Brawl Stars stuff as well, and Counter-Strike, and her ability to maintain conversation and, you know, engage everyone. You know, she was one of the first people that I saw interview multiple people at once. You know, she would have a whole team around her and she'd jump from player to player, but it would happen so seamlessly that I really enjoyed watching that. Ian's call and response stuff is great. He's super like hype guy on stage and brings a lot of energy to the table. I think Adam Savage is similar as well. In that style, I mean, Shox, you can't really fault her. She's the kind of host that really, really pays so much attention to detail and will ensure that she knows every element of play that happens, and she'll reference it in most of her interviews. And also, you can just tell that she preps a lot. One of the things that I pride myself on is the amount of preparation I do. If you're ever, you know, backstage with me or like other talent that I've worked with, hopefully will tell you that I have like a stack of cue cards like this thick that's just covered in notes, and it'll be for each team for like what happened in a specific play or a specific round of like, you know, whatever it is. And so I'll just like try and prep as much as I can. And I've been told that, you know, Shox is similar in that way. And so I'm happy that I got told that I do something similar to her because of how, you know, amazing she is at what she does. OJ Borg, like being a stage host in Counter-Strike, is always so impressive to watch, and it comes so naturally to him. He looks so comfortable on stage. So there are like, you know, fragments that you pick up from other people and you blend them together with your style in order to kind of make sure you're the best at what you do. And ultimately you take information, or you take those tidbits of information from people that work consistently and across other esports as well, because you know then they're doing something right. And of course, the legend herself, Lottie Van Praagh, who, you know, again, one of those people that preps an insane amount so that she just doesn't get anything wrong, and is a greater conversation, greater back and forth, and so seamless when she's on desk to go between analysts and casters and then throw to game in and out. You know, she's great. So yeah, I think just focusing on multiple people, don't close yourself off from other people and go, this is how I want to do it and this is how I should do it. I think that should always be open to change and to learning from other people.
Yeah, I love what you said there about preparation, because obviously out in LA when you were working for Esports Wars and Mobies, which, by the way, we'll get to the whole blend of mobile esports and traditional esports. But something that was mentioned is every time I came back to the hotel after being at the office, you were always in the lobby. I sat on a table with a stack of cue cards just writing them out. And as I walked past, you're like, do you know much about this thing that's happening at this time or this finalist? Because obviously, like, the Esports Wars is a very different gig to a traditional esports. You know, like, there isn't like the stage host with players style. Like yourself, you were on the red carpet interviewing people as they came through. You had to ask, you know, outfits, play, like, you sort of, you created your own fun games with them rather than sort of just asking generic questions, which kind of is a testament to yourself in terms of going above and beyond for preparation. You add cue cards based on if this person comes and wants to talk, because the Esports Awards red carpet, it isn't definite who you will talk to. It's kind of like there's a conveyor belt. Some people say yes, some people say no, some people are raring to go. So how did you kind of deal with, you know, obviously the spontaneousness of that when you had some prep, but sometimes you were just given someone who, you know, you had no idea you'd be talking to?
Yeah, I guess that you have to have, one of my main things was that ensuring that I knew who it was when they came up on the stage. There's nothing worse than someone stepping onto the circular stage that we had, and I have no idea who they are. Like, you want to make, it's about making someone feel special or making them feel, you know, welcome as well. By knowing who they are and what they do, they then get more comfortable in the interview. Whereas if I'm like, tell us who you are and tell us what you do, that immediately will put a guest on the back foot and go, this guy doesn't know who I am. So these questions are going to be plain and generic. So I guess for me, the preparation involved was just to ensure that everyone felt like you deserve to be here because you do this and this is kind of your role in gaming, and I've seen what some of your videos on YouTube, or I've seen this event that you've done and I think it was truly amazing because, and suddenly they're like, oh, okay, like I'm almost with a fan or someone who appreciates what I do. So a lot of the preparation involved was just to ensure that it was all smooth sailing like that. And also just to offer variety for the viewer at home as well. If you're watching the broadcast from home and the same four core questions are being asked every time, like, what are you wearing? Like, why did you choose this outfit? You know, which award are you most excited for? It just becomes a boring conveyor belt of questions. So I'm like, right, well, let's write an individual interview for each person that might be coming up onto the stage with us. And of course, if there's some random people that get thrown in the mix, it just is what it is. You've got to roll with it as much as you can. But, you know, offering up as much variety as possible is a way to ensure that the broadcast is as interesting as possible.
Yeah, of course. And obviously, like I said, out there for Esports Awards, it is red carpet. But for the Mobies, it was, you were like the key host. You sat there, you knew it was coming, you knew what was happening. But yeah, obviously, such different things in terms of traditional esports and mobile esports. I feel like a lot of people don't actually fully grasp just how ridiculously huge mobile gaming, but mobile esports, everyone thinks of, you know, Candy Crush and, you know, the stereotype. And then you actually look at like MLBB, Clash, PUBG, they're selling out absolutely huge arenas. It's like you said, it's like an Olympic ceremony opening when like the teams are coming through. But what ultimately made you jump the gap to obviously do both of, you know, mobile esports and traditional esports?
Well, funnily enough, mobile esports was actually my first gig. So Clash of Clans was the first thing I did. I did something called the Town Hall 12 Cup at the end of 2019. That was my first esports gig. Didn't know a huge amount about Clash of Clans when I first went in, but I just studied as much as I could. I communicated with the analysts and the casters before I went in and just said, look, like, I'm happy to play the dumb guy here. I'm happy to be the casual gamer of Clash of Clans coming into this because you're offering so much detail and depth to strategies and, you know, troop counts and anything to do with Clash of Clans. Like, they had so much in-depth knowledge. I was like, well, why don't I be the desk host that actually isn't afraid to admit that I'm more of a casual player? And please, can you go into a bit more depth and explain it to me like I'm a 10-year-old, like I said earlier? So that was something that I actually didn't mind leaning on. And yeah, there are a few people that were like, why is this guy hosting it if he doesn't know the game in and out, inside and out? I'm like, but that's not an issue, because if we have casual gamers watching and I'm asking the right questions for them, then you're offering up a space for more people to join the broadcast and understand what's going on. So bridging the gap between mobile and stuff, I guess it wasn't really my choice. Mobile gaming was the first thing I was thrust into. And off the back of Clash of Clans and doing their world championships the following year in 2020, I actually got ESL Mobile, which was, you know, Asphalt, Clash Royale, Clash of Clans. Brawl Stars started bleeding into that when it came out. And I was, yeah, just heavily involved in the mobile scene from then on. And then it kind of bled into PUBG Mobile. And then it wasn't until the events like Gamers Without Borders, the DreamHack events that I did, and then Gamers 8, and now the Esports World Cup, is when I was doing the more traditional side of esports. So that's when I started doing Rocket League. I did a Rainbow Six event. I'd done COD, Counter-Strike, and things like that. So that was all thanks to those multi-tiered events that had multiple esports on. And then I got to kind of dip my toe into the PC and console side of esports, which was really exciting because that's the stuff that I played growing up. So that's kind of how I bridged the gap. And yeah, essentially now I'm a stage host for hire for kind of any of those games that would like me to jump in. And I know my limits and I know the games that I feel like I shouldn't touch purely on the basis that it would be a more generic overview of the game. For instance, I got asked to host a Dota 2 event and I actually just politely declined and was like, as much as I would love to do this, and I know how dedicated the fan base is for Dota and what a game it would be to get involved in, I just don't know enough about it. And in the short space of time between now and when the event starts, if I can't get to grips with this game enough, it'd be so transparent for a lot of the diehard fans that watch the esports to be like, this guy actually doesn't really know what he's talking about, or this guy doesn't actually play Dota, does he? And I just sometimes don't want to run that risk, and also don't want to do a disservice to people that want to watch a true fan and player of the game host the event.
Yeah, I understand that completely. And obviously you mentioned of, you know, you need the sort of, when you went into Clash of Clans, you were sort of, you know, the casual gamer style compared to the real analyst. And I think it's good for inclusivity, because not everyone watching an esports event, like, they might have played the game for 10 hours or 1,000 hours, but we know as esports, there is levels to a player. Is like, oh, best in the world, more like 20,000 hours played, whereas like, you play 1,000 hours, cool, you're now average. It's like, great. But like, the majority of viewers probably are going to fit more into the, you know, they like, they call it like lower elo, but more of like the very casual player base. Like, when you're there with like the top 5% of players, it's like, you got to remember, you're now the minority of players. You being an expert and understanding pro player, like, that is not actually what these few hundred thousand live viewers actually are. But obviously you mentioned a few times around a few of the mobile games you've hosted, a few of the traditional games you hosted, but what would you say is sort of the biggest similarity between mobile gaming and traditional esports? Because for me, watching a broadcast, they look identical, but I feel like a lot of people still don't quite realize this.
I think production-wise, it's still ultimately the same. Like, they're treated the same in terms of production value and production elements. I feel like mobile obviously has its limitations from a technological perspective. And obviously, you know, when you show a mobile game on a giant LED screen in a huge arena, like, it's not going to look the same as showing like a PC or a PC game, right? Just purely based on like on power. But mobile is quickly catching up to, you know, in terms of graphics and things like that. I've seen some incredible stuff that's coming out. And I think that to your point about, you know, the majority versus the minority, you know, I did a PUBG Mobile event, and, you know, halfway through the semi-final on the Saturday, the game crashed and there was an update. And everyone was like, what's going on? And we had a 20-minute gap where we had to update all the phones, and we had to fill time. The casters, the analysts, everyone got involved. I was talking to people in the crowd, and we were backstage and we were like, why would they do this? And then someone from production had to be like, well, you got 100 people on stage versus 100 million players that play this game. You know, who is the game, you know, the publisher, who are they going to pick? And you think, oh God, yeah, not everyone is as dialed into the esports as you think, because you're so heavily ingrained in it. You think, how could they do this? But ultimately, you know, there's 100 million players and only a fraction of them watch the esports. And obviously we're trying to encourage them to watch more and more, but so many more casuals than there are pros or people that play thousands of hours, like you said. So that was an interesting wake up call for me in getting like so amped up and upset that the fact that this broadcast had to almost be shut down for like 20 minutes, but ultimately it was for good reason, for the game itself. So yeah, I've completely forgotten your question. We were talking about, wait, where were we, Alex? Alex, where were we?
Do you know what? I feel like you answered it, because it was about the sort of similarities between esports and traditional esports.
Oh, yeah, like the mobile versus PC elements. Yeah, I think that actually people don't understand how many more casual gamers there are on the mobile side. Obviously, it's heavily ingrained in Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia is probably the biggest market for mobile games. I was recently in Indonesia for a month, and a lot of people that, like, so many of them play PUBG. PUBG Mobile is like such a big thing out there. And, you know, I'd ask any taxi driver that I would get, or anyone in a shop or something, I could actually go, do you play PUBG Mobile? And they're all just like, yeah, PUBG Mobile. Yeah, I play that. And you just, it's so vast. And I don't know, I think they have something like a few billion active accounts on PUBG Mobile, which is just wild. So the scale of it is enormous. I just guess we aren't as familiar with it in kind of Western culture, because we have so many more people in this side of the world that maybe have PCs or consoles. And that's what's kind of we focus on.
Yeah, we're wrapped up in sort of our own bubble of esports, and we forget that esports is a niche of gaming. Like, Call of Duty is a great example. It's one of the most popular games, at least in Britain. Like, literally pretty much everyone plays Call of Duty or they play FIFA. I'd say barely any of them know about the esports side. They'll know of an Optic or a FaZe just because that, like, obviously the YouTube presence. But if you were to say to the average Call of Duty player in the UK, like, oh, would you know about the CDL? They go, what's a CDL?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, esports, we're still the niche of gaming. You see game sales of like a few hundred million. It's like, yep, that's more than there is esports players and esports people who know what esports even is.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like, also you look at football and, like, the professional side of football is actually, like, the forefront of everything. And they're like, esports kind of has it backwards, right? Obviously, there's a lot more casual footballers than there are pro footballers, but people know a lot more about pro football than they do. That's soccer for the Americans watching. Then they know a lot more
as well.
Huh?
Everyone's got a favorite team in football as well.
Oh my God, yeah.
Sports fan, they've got a team. Esports, even people who like esports don't always pick a team. Like, people don't have the loyalties through, like, of an org through different games. It's like, if you like G2 and League of Legends, you might not like them in Counter-Strike. It's, there isn't actually that loyalty across titles, I feel.
I guess it's the, you got to play the long game, right? You got to build it, you got to grow it, and ultimately, like, content is what drives this all, as we've seen, like, the proof's in the pudding, like Optic Gaming. Imagine, like, the amount of money, time, effort they've sunk into creating content in order to grow that org's presence. That's ultimately, that's the key, right? That's the gateway and that's the path into creating a dedicated audience and a dedicated fan base. It lies within content. This is because, like, content is at the forefront of all of this, right? Ultimately, broadcasts and esports, it's content as well. It's live content. It's live streaming the best players in the world. So if you can get your claws into the content side and get the strategy put together, I think that's ultimately how you grow a successful org and how you grow a dedicated fan base. It's just, you've got, it's very difficult to find pro players who are also characters. Like, that's the diamond in the rough, right? You've got to find the pro players that also bring a lot of energy and are very talented at making content. And they're few and far between, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. Now, we are nearly out of time, so it's worth getting a few of the closing up questions in here whilst we still got a little bit of time. But I just wanted to know, obviously, your plans for 2025, but also, what are your favorite games and, like, kind of what are you playing right now and where do you see yourself in 2025? What have you got coming up on the horizon?
So in terms of, like, this year, like, I think that it would be great, obviously, to get involved in the Esports World Cup once again. Last year, I hosted 4 games out of the 21 that they had. So being able to go back and do the same again to kind of grow my presence within that game and then ultimately get out of the back of the Esports World Cup to go into their own community kind of side of gaming. So, for instance, like PUBG, we've got... I host the PUBG stuff at the Esports World Cup, but it'd be great to get involved in PGS, like, throughout the year as well. That's ultimately the goal, right? PUBG Mobile, I do a lot of stuff with them already. I'm going to be hosting PMGO, which is in Uzbekistan. I'm going to be hosting that in April. I'm also, you know, those kinds of things. I'd love to step back into Call of Duty at the Esports World Cup as well. And then ultimately the CDL would be fantastic. You know, logistics do play a part in it though, because I know that they hire people, you know, in Ohio. So, like, and there's so much incredible talent to choose from in the States. Why would they fly someone from the UK over to do it? So there are ultimately logistical reasons as to why, you know, certain people don't work with certain games. And so, but I'd love to get involved in Call of Duty again and Warzone again as well. A great set of talent, by the way, that work in Warzone. And I don't think they get their colors enough. You know, Enigma is just fantastic. Dandro is fantastic. You know, there's so many amazing people that work in Warzone as talent. And yeah, they need to be sung about a little bit more, I think. So yeah, Warzone, Call of Duty, PUBG Mobile. And for me, I think that a game that I would just love to step foot in at some point this year in any capacity really is Apex. I play a lot of Apex Legends. I stream it as well. I've actually just started streaming it on TikTok. Which I've now unlocked Live Studio on my second account on TikTok. So I'm going to be streaming a lot more of that on there. But yeah, Apex is a game that I've played since it came out. It's one of the few multiplayer games that I've played since it came out. And I love it. It's just like fast paced, high energy, love the legends that they integrate into the game. And that would be just great to be involved in as an esport itself. I think it's doing great things. So Apex would be cool. I love the fact, by the way, that there's chess at the Esports World Cup this year. How epic is that? I'm so excited to see how they're going to, like, present it and what the hosting and the casting is going to be like over it.
I can't wait for you to be on stage trying to drum up a crowd chant during the chess match.
Can you imagine?
60-second gap.
Introing Magnus Carlsen onto the stage would be pretty cool. But who knows, man? Like, I guess that yeah, with stage hosting, things change quite often. Games want to go in different directions throughout the year. I never really count my chickens. I never see any games or events throughout the year as guarantees. So I'd love to get involved in the Esports Awards again at the end of the year. You know, there's just like, there's loads of stuff that I'd love to dip my toe into. In terms of new stuff, Apex is probably at the top of the list. But in terms of the stuff that I already do, I would love to have repeats this year because it kind of gives me the ability to grow within the community as well and to establish my role a bit more in that community. And also, they're games that I love playing in. Like, I wouldn't say yes to doing it if I didn't love it. Brawl Stars, Clash of Clans, they hold a place close to my heart because they're kind of the people that gave me the first opportunities within the kind of gaming space. So yeah, those are the things I've got on the horizon. And, you know, they announced that the PUBG Mobile Global Championships are going to be in Thailand at the end of this year. So if I get to go and do that, that would be amazing. And so yeah, the ability to travel, you know, like you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, is can be a bit of a hindrance, but also, I mean, like, it's travel and work. Like, how awesome is that? So
yeah, you know, gift and a curse. It's like, it's beautiful to see the world, but it's obviously the drawbacks of being around the world.
I'll take the family out a week early and we'll have a week's holiday out there before I go and do the gig. So that's also something that you can get involved with. Like, embrace it. Don't fight against it. Embrace it. Like, come on, let's all go for a week's holiday before I jump on stage. Get a nice tan.
Yeah, let's go see the world. That sounds incredible. Now, obviously, your 2035 sounds incredible, but I do have one last question for you, and it's, imagine Rocket, you know, they've grown up, they're a teenager now, and they've looked at you and they've decided, you know, I'd like to make some kind of career out of esports because they're inspired. What advice would you like to give them?
Oh, Rocket grew up and wanted to get involved in esports. I mean, if you wanted to get involved in esports as a player, you know, ultimately you've got to know what you're up against. I think that it's about education, really. It's like educating them and knowing this is how good you've got to be in order to play at that level. Teaching balance in life with anything is huge. You know, there's a lot of people that just play like 12 hours a day and don't look after themselves. So you got to introduce the importance of things like nutrition and having a balanced life, as well as training as well. And I think that, yeah, from a dad's perspective and from someone that loves esports, and I'm not going to push back against anything like that. But again, it's having that healthy mind and also understanding what we spoke about earlier about content being such a vital area within esports. If you really want to thrive as an esports pro player, you have to be able to string a sentence together. You have to be able to produce decent content because that adds another string to your bow, but also you become a way more... a lot more valuable to an organization if you're also producing interesting content and you have your own little community that you can then add to the community within that esports organization. So as a player, I think that'd be great for him to learn that. And the fact that I have knowledge of the esports industry is, I think, a huge bonus because I can guide him and how he wants to do it. But, you know, in other elements, if you wanted to go in as talent, you know, there are foundations that you need to learn. You can't just be thrown into it. You have to understand what you're doing, understand your core audience. And, you know, you have to be able to communicate correctly and understand all the ins and outs of production as well. I guess that's one of the things that as a dancer that I didn't mention that was beneficial for me going into being a host was that I understood all the behind the scenes stuff as well from being a dancer backstage and, you know, taking part in these events and TV shows like X Factor and Britain's Got Talent, you understand how production works. So then going into being a host, I already had that foundation of knowledge about production, cameras, angles, you know, talking to people on set and understanding what everyone's role is. Having that education as a base layer is, you know, goes miles, you know, because a lot of people that step into it from the esports side, from being a pro player, may not understand that level of backstage is something that they have to understand going forward. And so, yeah, I think that having foundations going into something like esports is essential because then, you know, you truly want to be ingrained in that community. And yeah, love what you do. Don't do it if you don't love it. So, you know, because there will be difficult times along the way as well. So you want to ensure that what you're doing is a passion because working in esports can be hard, man. Long hours. If you don't love it, you're going to hate it.
Yeah, you know, I love what you said, where it's like, that's translatable for everything, is just love what you do. But obviously, before we go, I think it's worth that you plug in all your socials. You know, you mentioned you're live streaming Apex, but everything, just so if anybody wants to find you, they can.
Sure, yeah. So TikTok and Instagram is I Am Mr. Banks. That's at I Am Mr. Banks. And I've got a YouTube channel that we do vlogs weekly, which is more family orientated. But that's Barney and Jamie. And that's me and my partner. Just kind of life on a week-to-week basis, following our crazy life of her going away and working and me staying at home. And it's just kind of, if you're a parent or a young parent or someone who's going to be a parent soon, it's kind of content that you can go to kind of see the ins and outs of two working parents. Because nowadays, you kind of got to be two working parents. It's very difficult to be a one working parent household nowadays, you know?
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate you coming down here. I'm sure we'll have you back on soon enough. But thank you very much for coming here talking. And thank you very much to everyone out back home listening.